November 27th, 1991, and we're in Brooklyn, New York. This is Herb Bergman from SABRE, Society of American Baseball Research, and I have the pleasure of interviewing Mr. Hank LeBeau, who is reputedly the oldest living bat boy of the Brooklyn Dodgers. Hank was bat boy back in 1915 and 1916 for the Dodgers, and besides doing that, he's done a lot of other interesting things in his life, as we'll hear. Hank, I want to thank you for giving us the time to talk with you today.
You're welcome.
Hank, let me start from the beginning. Could tell us where, when you were born, and a little bit about your family.
Well, I was born and brought up in the borough of Brooklyn, in the Bushwick section. At the turn of the century, my birthday happens to be May 27th, and I was born in 1902, and that's many, many moons ago. I lived initially in the Bushwick section, and we moved to Eastern Parkway and Troy Avenue, where my father had a cigar store, and they sold a lot of toys and other things, and I was a delivery boy at the time. I delivered newspapers. I had to get up at 5:30 in the morning and deliver them. And I was taught by my parents to be economical and thrifty.
Have any brothers and sisters?
I do not have any brothers and sisters. And it seems that I got married, and my wife, I got married at a late date, and my wife is deceased now about 17 years. And being I was an only child, it seems that it was destined that I would only have one child, my wife and I, and we have three grandchildren, two of which are in college now, and one is going into college shortly.
Oh, that's really great. Your mother helped your father with the cigar store?
Yes. I was born of German immigrant parents, German and French. My dad had a little French in him, and my mother was of the German origin. I remember we had a cigar store at the corner of, near the corner of Troy Avenue and Eastern Parkway. And I remember very well a potbelly stove. Mm-hmm. It lingers in my memory. Because it was my duty to go down to the woodshed and get the wood and the coal to stoke this potbelly stove. And on one occasion, I had to go down, and I remember it well, and I went on the top of the wood pile with candles, and one of the candles fell down to the bottom of the wood pile, and it started a conflagration, and our house almost burnt down. Luckily, the firemen got there in time and saved most of it.
Wow.
But it was quite an experience. The store was right across the way on Troy Avenue and St. John's, where there was a supermarket called Hugo Heyman, H-E-Y-M-A-N. The name has stuck out all my life because it is filled with a lot of memories. They delivered the groceries with donkey-drawn little carts. Each one was about 6 or 8 feet wide and about 10 feet long, and two donkeys pulling them. And they had around, if I remember well, anywhere from 12 to more than a dozen wagons that made the deliveries. And my father was a strict disciplinarian, and he made sure, or made sure that I listened to him, and if I didn't, I got what for. And at 8 o'clock, I knew I had to be in bed, not like the children of today.
I was going to ask you, this is before you got involved with the Dodgers, what would a typical day be as far as getting up in the morning and delivering your papers and going to school?
Well, a typical day in those days was to get up around 4:35 or 5:30, and be ready to sort out the deliveries of the newspapers. And they had to be delivered before the people went to work. But I can tell you that's one of the reasons. My mother lived to be 95. My father, unfortunately, died at 77. But the strict discipline that was given to me in my early life has paid dividends as far as I'm concerned, that I don't think that I would ever have gotten to the age of almost 90 now within a few months. Now, one of the things that also stands out in my memory is that I, like all other children in those days, liked to try anything within reason, and I smoked cigarettes. And every time my mother found a pack of cigarettes in my pocket, even though we had a cigar store, I had to pay a quarter a pack for them, and I got a nickel off. Instead of paying a quarter, I got them for 20 cents. But I was taught the value of money. I was paid a dollar or a dollar and a half a week for delivering the newspapers. I had to save that money, and with it I could take my girl to the movies. The movies in those days were 2 cents, two for a nickel. If you had 2 cents and the other kid had 3 cents, you both went into the movies. They were called a Nickelodeon. And there was a piano player in a little storefront theater in those days. And they played mostly cowboys and Indian songs, cowboys and Indian pictures, rather. And they played, the piano player played fast music when the cowboys came down, or the militia or whatnot, and the bugles. And this is the way they had the soundtrack. They didn't have any soundtrack in those days. Now, getting back to a very important incident in my life where I was almost killed, I used to pet the donkeys from the supermarket and go across every night. And one night, my dad whistled, and without looking, I knew I had to be home at the stroke of 8, and I ran across the street, and along came a high-bodied 1909 Ford and struck me. Luckily, it was only going about 5 to 8 miles an hour across the intersection. And I rolled out of the back of the car, not one scratch on my body, and the driver of the car turned white and he wanted to take me to the hospital. And it turned out I didn't have anything wrong with me, Had it gone over my neck, I wouldn't be here to tell the story I'm telling right now.
Wow. Were there traffic lights, et cetera?
No traffic lights.
So everybody was on their own.
Right.
When did you first become interested and involved with baseball?
Oh, yes. Inasmuch as the cigar store was located at the top of the hill on Troy Avenue, and you could walk Catty Corner from Troy and Eastern Parkway, Catty Corner down to Bedford Avenue where Ebbets Field was located, and you could walk across the lots without striking any buildings. That's how unpopulated it was in those days. And I, as a kid, was interested in baseball, like all kids, and I went to the player's entrance, and I went for months on end trying to get the players to take us in. And every now and then they would befriend somebody and take them in. So after a few months, I got befriended by Casey Stengel.
About what year was this?
And this was around 19... I guess the beginning of 1915 season. And he called me Carrot Top, and he was 25 years of age at the time. And I remember he and Jake Dorbert took me in a few times too also. Jake Dorbert was the first baseman. Casey was the right fielder. And what else do I remember?
Well, they took you in and then you sat in the grandstand?
They took me in as a good luck charm. And if they won the game that day, you had a chance maybe of coming back the next day. Now, in those days, there was no discipline as far as the manager having control over his ball players, because Wilbert Robinson was the manager. And if I remember correctly, he was manager in name only, but he didn't exercise the kind of managerial prowess that the managers do today. And he used to tell the ball players, if you're going to do any drinking, you can drink anywhere, but don't drink in the hotel, because that's where I do my drinking. And that's the way it was. Now, in those days, ball players made anywhere from $2,200 to $3,200 a year. And the crowds that came to Ebbets Field on occasion were as little as 500 and sometimes 1,200. That's how little, because the whole field only at that time held about 20,000. It was later double-decked and made into a big field. And one thing that stands out quite well with me, because I made friends later in life with a politician by the name of Abe Stark. And there's an Abe Stark Senior Center today in his name. And Abe Stark was a crafty politician and businessman. He had a clothing store on Pitkin Avenue. And he got the idea of renting a small space about maybe 2.5 foot high by about 15 or 20 foot long on the bottom of the scoreboard, and it said, hit this sign and get a free suit at the Abe Stark clothing store. To my knowledge, and to this day, I don't think anybody ever was able to collect the suit that Abe offered them. And I remember Abe Stark quite well, the politician, because politicians were politicians also in those days. And unfortunately, Abe Stark's Abe Stark's memory wasn't that good in later life, but he still held the job of borough president. And they used to meet in Dubrow's, where I used to go for my coffee on occasion, and I got to know Abe quite well. And he still maintained his position, and many, many times I recall the politicians would come up with important papers to sign, and they'd go over to Abe and say, "Sign this, Abe," and he didn't even look at it, but he signed it. And that's the way politics were run in those days.
Right.
And the way it's run today, it's run a little bit better, but the money's different. Okay. Now, to get elected congressman or senator, it cost $3.5 million.
Getting back to when Casey and Jake Dabbert used to take you into the ballpark, how did it evolve that you got into the bat boy position?
Well, after, you see, in those days, when the player took you in, he took you in as his right-hand man. And you stayed with him in the outfield, and you ran down the balls.
This was during batting practice.
During batting practice.
Mm-hmm.
And when the ball went over Casey's head or Jake Dorbert's head or one of the ball players that were around, they would say, "Go get it, kid." And I would run after it and throw it back. So I remember quite well throwing back hundreds of balls until one day the business part of my anatomy woke me up to the fact that maybe those balls, if I kept one here and there, I might be able to do something with them. So I had my mother sew pockets in both size of my baseball uniform, and when I went to the field in the morning after I became a fixture there as the regular bat boy, Casey took me in regularly after that. We won a lot of games together with my red hair, and let's see if I could.
Yeah, how did the bat boy, how did you evolve into an official bat boy in a sense?
Oh, yes. After being taken in quite a bit, then in the 1915 season, the bat boy really was more or less running errands for five or six ball players and then sitting on the bench. You didn't have a lot of bats the way they have it today with a bat rack where you take the bat and bring it back. I remember very well in those days that each ball player had a bat bag, and each bag held two bats. And these two bats were the player's pride and joy, and they did not allow anybody else to use them, with the net result that when they went up to bat, they took their own bat, brought it back, put it in their own bag, and that's the way they operated. But in later days, the bat boy came into being,
right,
and the bat racks that they have today came into being.
And you mentioned your prime job, in a sense, was to run errands.
Oh, yes.
Could you give us some examples of the kind
of things? Yes. I used to run, you see, as I said previously, Wilbert Robinson had a very paunchy belly, and Casey also had it. Zach Wheat did not have. He was more physical minded, mm-hmm, and he watched his body. But Casey was one of the few, and quite a, then there was a pitcher, you Casey, who was on the team at the time. He had quite a paunchy belly, and quite a few other ball players. Mm-hmm. And I recall that in 1916, they finally won the pennant. Mm-hmm. And then they were defeated they only won one game out of the entire five that they played.
In the World Series.
And I remember Babe Ruth went to Boston, and I didn't go with the team at the time because the bat boy didn't travel with them at that point. And I remember very well all the publicity attached to Babe Ruth pitching the entire 14 innings, and it was a low-scoring game, very low. And he won it in 14 innings. They didn't think anything of having a pitcher go 14 full innings. Today,
right,
there's a limit.
Now, you mentioned you did a lot of errands for as a bat boy.
Oh, yes. I'm glad you should ask that, because in those days, when I would go out for four, five, or six ball players and get them each beer and sandwiches, bring it back, each one would tip me a penny, and Wilbur Robinson was a big tipper. He gave me 2 cents. And as I said before, you saved those pennies and they were worth something, because you could take your girl to the movies,
right,
two for a nickel.
So you would go into the local neighborhood store?
Right. Today, people see a penny on the street, they don't even stoop to pick it up because it doesn't have any value.
Were there any other boys who were doing the same thing as you were for the Dodgers? You mentioned you worked for five or six of them.
Well, I don't believe there were too many, because they weren't allowed to bring in a lot. If they brought in one or two at a time, that was it. Sometimes two.
Mm-hmm.
And there might have been one other boy at the time that was brought in, the time I was brought in.
Now, you were going to a school at this time?
Yes. I was going to PS 167, and incidentally, I went back to PS 167, and I have been the keynote speaker on two or three occasions,
mm-hmm.
and I've given lectures in the library system on health and nutrition, and period.
Meg Daubert, you mentioned, was one of them, the first baseman.
Yes.
What could you tell us about him, what kind of guy he was?
Well, Jake Daubert was unique in as much as he was very physical-minded, and he did not drink a lot of beer like a lot of the other ball players, or eat a lot of sandwiches between meals, with the net result that he had quite a good body on him.
Mm-hmm.
There were not too many, for the most part, more than 50% of them did not watch their diet at all in those days, as I remember.
How did they treat you as a 15-year-old kid?
Baseball was, everything was matter of fact. There was no pomp, and you were just another person. They didn't think anything. You were on the field there. You roamed the outfield with all the ball players. It was very informal. And as I said before, when the ball went over the outfielder's head, they'd say, "Go get it, kid." They'd rather have you get it than they go and get it, because they didn't want to get tired.
Now, you did this during the summer months, because
during
you were still
summer,
going to
right.
school. How did your parents feel about this?
They didn't bother me at all.
Mm-hmm.
And later, as I said, I was a good hitter, and I got working for Brooklyn Union Gas Company as a ringer, getting $25. And then I had a tryout with a team by the name of the Bushwicks. And I remember them well. They were an outstanding team.
That's the Bushwicks.
There were a few players that graduated from the Bushwicks directly into the big leagues. They were almost like an international league team, although they weren't informal baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember well that they were supported by the fans on Sunday afternoon, and they had a keg of beer at third base, and anybody that hit a three-bagger or a home run, when they rounded third base, they were given a glass of beer to drink when they got in the dugout.
What about Casey Stengel?
And Casey was a great prankster. He used to play a lot of pranks on everybody. One of his favorite pranks was the whoopee cushion that he used. And then,
What was that all about?
Well, he had a cushion full of air, and it when you sat on it, it sounded like
gas coming out.
Gas was coming out of your stomach.
Uh-huh.
And then he played a great prank, a well-known prank, one time on Casey, and then on Wilbert Robinson, rather. And they had a falling out.
What, do you remember what the prank was?
The prank was that he dropped a rubber balloon filled with water. It was supposed to be filled with not with water. And it hit Casey, and he thought it was blood, and he thought he was finished for life. And after that, he never forgave Casey, and that was when Casey left the Dodgers, I believe.
How did the other guys take these pranks?
Well, they did all kinds of pranks. Whatever they could think of, they did, with the matchsticks and the soles of the shoes and all of the... there was no discipline. Everybody was very informal.
How did the other guys take these pranks from Casey? In a good humor? Or?
They were more or less good sports at it. Because mm-hmm. they knew that if they did it, they were going to get it done to them later on.
Uh-huh. What about, how were things like in the clubhouse? What kind of things did, went on there?
There was a lot of camaraderie in the clubhouse. They didn't take the game seriously very much at all, like they do today. Today everything is a serious situation, although there is some camaraderie, but not like it was then. Mm-hmm. It was very informal.
What about the language, et cetera?
Oh, it's funny you should ask. Casey used more profanity than any one of them. Uh-huh. Every second word was profane.
Mm-hmm. And how many reporters used to come down and cover the team regularly?
Not too many. There were maybe one or two. They had a photographer on the field. It wasn't covered as completely as it is today.
Mm-hmm. And what about Zach Wheat? What can you tell us about him?
Well, what I did tell you was that he was very physical-minded, and I don't remember any details about his private life. Mm-hmm. But he was considered one of the top players at the time, although he never was an outstanding hitter, if I remember right. He never hit above maybe 270 or something like that. But he was a pretty good hitter and a very good fielder, one of the best.
Mm-hmm. Now these players during the season, did they rent places in Brooklyn to live, or where did they go after the game? Whether they lived like in a hotel or something, or don't you know?
I don't recall any of the details of where the ball players lived, because I wasn't that close to them at the time.
Mm-hmm. Did you get to know any of the pitchers? Like, I noticed that Pfeffer had a couple of very good years there.
Not particularly, no. There wasn't... unless you were befriended or taken in by a particular ball player and you got to know that particular ball player, Otherwise, as I said, the Bat Boys jobs, the real Bat right. Boys came into being around in many right. later years because of the fact that in those days they had bats, but they treasured them and took good care of them.
Now, who took care of the visiting team, if anybody? As far as Bat Boys or anything, where they were sort of on their own?
Well, if you were there for the day, then there were two boys. One would be assigned to the visiting team and one for the home team.
Did you ever get in to know any of the visiting players?
Yes, a couple of them. Who do I remember? I remember people like Honest Wagner.
Mm-hmm. Remember anything particular about him that he...
Well, he became famous as a hitter.
Any personal involvement you have with him as far as doing an errand for him?
Not really, no. Uh-huh. No. Mm-hmm.
And what about, who would you say is the best player that you saw when you were a kid?
Who was the best? That's a good question.
Or, you know, three or four of the best. You ever see Christy Mathewson? He was toward the end of his career.
Yes, when I got to know him, it was toward the end of his career. Mm-hmm. As I said, my folks, as far as I was concerned, were business-minded.
Yeah.
And after putting in about 2 years, you know, quite a bit of time with the Dodgers.
Right.
I went into the business world.
How about?
I went to Commercial High. I remember that well. Yes, I played on the Commercial High baseball team, and that's how I got into the Brooklyn Union Gas job, where I was a ringer.
What was the condition of the field back in those days? I mean, today they have a whole crew of groundskeepers, etc. What was the groundskeeping crew like? Do you remember anything about that?
Well, they didn't have as many groundkeepers then as they had now. They used to have a crew of three or four.
Mm-hmm.
Today they have a whole crew of 12, 15 or more.
How would you describe the condition of the playing field? Was it pretty smooth?
It was fairly good, but not like it is today. They played on a lot of... there were a lot of bumps on it. They played football on the field as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you remember any particular game?
Soccer.
Right.
It was rented out for various other sports.
Uh-huh. Do you remember any particular game that stands out in your mind that you saw while you were a bat boy?
Not really.
Uh-huh.
I guess
there were a lot of them.
There were... The Dodgers, before they won the pennant, were a very bad team because they... The amount of games they lost in proportion to the ones they won was very high. They always lost many more than they won.
Mm-hmm. Well, I see in 1915 they finished in third place, actually, but in 1916 they went to the top.
That was the first year that they did well. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel there was any, what made the difference between the 2 years? Any particular player, or just things happened to come together?
It seems to me things came together. The team played, well, I know there were a couple of players, they made a couple of trades, and I believe they started to gel.
Uh-huh. When around in 1916 did they really begin to feel that they had a chance to win it all? Could you sense anything in the clubhouse, etc.? I know in 1916, I think the Giants went on a tremendous winning streak, and they won like 26 straight games. Do you remember anything about the players?
I do remember that vaguely, that they did win a lot of games, yes. That I remembered.
Uh-huh. remember...
You know, we're going back now...
Oh, I appreciate that.
I say we're going back to over 60, 70 years ago.
I absolutely appreciate that.
And the fact that I was never... really interested in baseball to the extent
right.
where I wanted to make a career of it because
right.
I realized it wasn't that good. But I do remember, you know, I played, initially when I played baseball in those days, I played with older men.
Mm-hmm.
As a sport, you know, because
right.
I enjoyed it.
Right.
And there was one team that played in Commercial Field, which was located at the bottom of the hill on Empire Boulevard and Albany Avenue,
mm-hmm.
Near Albany Avenue. And the name of the team stands out well. They were called the Old Hams.
What was the reason for that?
Old Hams, because most of the ball players were old enough to be my father. And I was a big boy and was able to play with them, and it was an honor for me to play with them because
right.
some of the ball players were international league, ex-players, you know, players that had some stature, and they were playing it now for the exercise.
Remember any particular ones?
Well, there was one player who was an ex-league. His name was Fred Feldblum, F-E-L-D-B-L-U-M. He stands out because he ran the whole club. He was the manager and ran everything, and I do remember him quite well because he kept the club together.
Uh-huh. Is this done for money or just...
No, we played...
It was just a pure amateur.
Right, amateur. We just played it for the fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think we played other teams that came in. And I think on occasion we used to maybe play for a few dollars, but nothing much.
What were the baseball gloves like back then?
Oh, that's a good question.
As compared with today.
That's a good question. I remember that very well because the baseball gloves were about one quarter the size or less than they are today. They were very small gloves, and by having such small gloves, more errors were committed. But nobody ever worried about making a lot of errors. It didn't mean anything in those days.
It was pretty common, in other words.
Right.
How much did a glove cost in those days?
A glove was $1 or $2. Today they're about 200, I think.
Now, you had mentioned before...
A bat was... I think the ball sold for $1.
Right. Of course, in a tremendous rivalry developed later on, anyway, between the Dodgers and the Giants. Was that in existence back then? Between the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants?
Was it
something special when the Giants came into
Memphis? Oh, yeah. The rivalry was very keen between the Giants and the Dodgers. That I do remember.
Uh-huh. How would that be?
Right through the ages, the Dodgers and Giants were mortal enemies, more or less.
Could you sense anything in the players, like when the Giants were coming into town? Did things become a little bit different?
Oh, yes. There was a sense of excitement. And then later on, if I remember correctly, in later years, because I was out of it then, but the Yankees and the Dodgers were competing for the business.
Mm-hmm. John McGraw, of course, was the head of the Giants then. Did you ever have any personal contact with him?
Not really.
Do you remember the particular game where the Dodgers clinched the pennant against? I think they were playing the Giants that day. Any particular memory about that?
I knew some of the details, to be very frank. Let me see.
I mean, nothing that you remember.
I don't remember it particularly, okay. No.
Now, you had mentioned that the Dodgers went on to play the Red Sox in 1916, and among the Red Sox was a young pitcher by the name of Babe Ruth.
Yeah, well, he was the one that pitched 14 innings and thought nothing of it. 14 innings in those days didn't mean anything. Now they can save their arms, and if they get by till the ninth inning, or even less, they take them out.
Now, that, I think the 14-inning game was up in Boston, right?
Right.
Now, when they played the games at Ebbets Field, were you bat boy during those games?
Yes, yes.
Okay, and what do you remember about that World Series? What kind of crowd was there, first of all?
They had every seat sold, yes. Mm-hmm. The field in those days, 1916, had, they put extra seats in the field, and maybe the maximum was 22,000 they had at the whole game with the extra seats.
A lot of excitement in the borough at that time?
Oh, yes. It created a lot of excitement that the Dodgers had finally won a pennant.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you see Ruth pitch at Ebbets Field, or did he?
No, he didn't pitch at Ebbets Field. He pitched in Boston.
Uh-huh. Did he happen to play?
Because they won. He pitched the one game in Boston, and then he was in the rotation, and then he didn't have to pitch anymore because they won 4 out of 5.
He didn't happen to play the outfield in the days he went. Not at that particular time.
No, he was. At that time, he was a pitcher. Then later, as I recall, they made him into an outfielder because when he was a pitcher and he got up three or four times during the game, two or three of the times that he got up in the game that he pitched in Boston, he hit a couple home runs, I believe.
Do you remember any of the players talking about him at that time?
Anybody? It was a very low-scoring game, so yeah. I think he one of his home runs won it, I believe.
Anybody feel there was something special about him at that time, or he was just sort of another young, good player?
Nothing. He was another good player.
Do you remember what...
He hadn't come into his fame.
Yeah, he was a kid then. What remember what the winning and losing share was in the World Series?
Oh,
you don't know.
You're talking about peanuts because because the winning shares and losing shares depended on the money that they took in for the first three games, I guess, out of five. They had it in those days where the money was divided. The total money of the aggregate from the first three games, I believe,
mm-hmm.
And you can imagine how much money there was because they had to give so much to the winning team, so much to the losing team, and then first and second, I think, shared a small amount of money.
How about you as a bat boy, the fact that they won the pennant and got into World Series, did they give you anything extra?
Oh, yeah, you got a... We didn't win it, but when they won the pennant...
Yeah, right.
They gave you a little gratuity. Well, there wasn't much.
We talked about a couple of dollars here and there?
Yeah, it wasn't very much.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. You have any bad experience with any of the players, particularly?
Not particularly, no. There was... No bad blood there, nothing that I remember.
Mm-hmm. Ever see a Grover Cleveland Alexander pitch? It was with Philadelphia at the time.
Yeah, well, he came into Ebbets Field. I saw him pitch once, on one occasion, and I was struck with the with his ability. He was an outstanding pitcher, yes. Mm-hmm. But as far as... As far as the details of of baseball, I wasn't too close with
when,
that.
During the game, when they sent you out for these errands, beer and whatever, this was in the middle of the game?
Middle of the game, right.
And they would sit in the dugout and be guzzling beer?
And they would guzzle beer and sandwiches right in the middle of the game with no buddy telling him what to
do. And the fans accepted that.
Of course.
And the reporters accepted
that. Of course.
And what kind of things would they typically talk about when they were sitting in the dugout?
Women.
No particular talk about the game itself, huh?
Yes, they spoke about the game, but they always had private lives that they found when they came back. They were more keen on talking about their private lives.
And then their women, etc. Pointing to women in the stands, maybe things like that.
Oh yes.
And they didn't particularly feel embarrassed talking about that in front of you.
Right. Uh-huh. And in those days, there were
and the guzzle beer on the bench, etc. Nobody thought anything about it. When the game was over and the players got dressed and left the ballpark, were there usually a lot of fans hanging around, autographs, things like that, or was it?
No autographing. Autographing in those days, there were some people who went for it, but it didn't mean anything. The players were just ordinary players as far as they were concerned. There were a few outstanding ones.
Mm-hmm. In those days, any big to-do about baseball cards and things like that? I mean, you as a kid or any of your friends?
Cards didn't come into being in those days.
Mm-hmm. Or there weren't that many of them.
There were baseball cards that came out, that they had them, but you got baseball cards and all the cigarettes. I remember the name of the cigarettes was... Helmer and Mecca and Piedmont.
Well, one of them was the famous Honus Wagner card, which he
had
discontinued because he was a non-smoker.
That's right.
Most valuable card there is today. I imagine that the fact that you were a bat boy was known to your friends, of course.
Oh, yeah.
What did that mean?
They were all quite envious, the fact that I got taken into the game by Casey Stengel and Jake Dorbit.
Uh-huh.
And then finally, after a while, they took me in. I was there permanently, and I was able to go in on my own.
Mm-hmm. Now, once you were through, what made you discontinue being the bat boy there? You did it for 2 years, right?
Yeah. Well, I went into commercial high school, and then I graduated, and I went to Heffley Institute of Technology.
You're too busy with school at this point.
And I took a business course, and then I...
What did you do in the summertime?
I worked part-time for Colgate-Palmolive-Pete. That's how I happened to get to work for them later on in later life as a salesman.
Mm-hmm.
Colgate-Palmolive with them, and then after a few years of doing that in the summertime, I got the idea of working for them, and they finally gave me a job as a salesman.
The fact that
as a salesman in the soap division.
Uh-huh. The fact that you had been a bat boy with the Dodgers, was this known or particularly mean anything when you began your employment, etc.?
No,
it never particularly came up.
No, it didn't. It didn't. It didn't mean that much. Mm-hmm.
Did you say being a bat boy had any particular impact in your life as far as your ideas, your philosophy, and things like that, or was that just sort of an isolated period in your life as a kid growing up?
Well, I don't think it had any impact on my life particularly because I didn't learn any discipline from baseball.
Quite the opposite. Exactly.
It was quite the opposite. And I didn't learn anything that would stand me in good stead as far as health and cleanliness is concerned.
Uh-huh.
And so... I had to do all those things on my own, but my parents were the ones that led me to go where I did.
Mm-hmm. And yet you mentioned to me before we tape this that in recent years you've become very involved with speaking about, I mean, your position as a bat boy in a sense gave you entree to several activities.
Well, that's very true.
So
that's
if you can tell us about some of those, that could be interesting.
Well, after I retired, let me start in the beginning.
Sure.
As far as going back to Colgate, I finally got a job as a youngster. I was delivering samples for them, and then as I got older, I applied and became a salesman covering a district in Brooklyn. And after being with them for quite a while, I rose from a salesman to a district manager, and I had charge of a small region which had possibly 5 to 8 men under my jurisdiction. That, and then later on, I left Colgate and became a regional manager for a company called Lane and Fink Products, who make Lysol. And I rose up with them as a regional manager. And then later on, became national sales manager.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had mentioned that after you retired, when did you retire? What year?
I retired 30 years ago.
Okay, yeah. So about 1960, 61. And you mentioned since that time, from time to time, your experience as the Dodger bat boy has caused invitations to be sent to you and certain involvements regarding baseball. Would you care to tell us about some of the invitations you've gotten that were connected with your baseball days?
Like what?
Like you had mentioned, you were invited to public school to speak, etc.
Oh, yes. Well, I happened to pay a visit to my old public school. And when they found out that I was a graduate so many years ago, I was invited to be a keynote speaker there, and then I went back for 2 years in a row, or 3 years in a row, I believe, mm-hmm. to be the keynote speaker. And later I had my autograph book from my graduation, and they asked if they could use it, so I left it with them, and it's waiting now to go into a permanent display when they get a display case.
Any particular names in that autograph book?
Oh yes, the graduating teachers of that
right.
year, 1917.
Right.
And the principal, Floyd R. Smith, I remember his name well.
Did you collect any players' autographs when you were with as a
I had quite a few, and then I gave them away.
Oh, you did?
Yes, like old kids.
Uh-huh. And I think you're involved with the Brooklyn Dodger Hall of Fame?
Later on, I got to meet Monty Ablett, the president of the Dodger Hall of Fame, and after a couple of years, I was admitted to the Dodger Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so from time to time, people I know interview you like here, and have written articles about you, etc. So in a way, it's had a lasting impact and part of your life anyway.
Oh yes.
Now you have mentioned about your life's philosophy. Would you like to include
yes.
talking about that?
Yes. Well, I was recently interviewed by the Brooklyn College Reporter, and we went. went into quite a few details, and he writes that his interview with me was rather interesting and uplifting, and I told him about the 100th anniversary of the Dodgers this spring, which was last spring, mm-hmm. included a TV special on NBC, and the fact that I was a bat boy in 15 and 16. He recently became a member of the Brooklyn Dodger Hall of Fame.
You could mention that thing about your diet and the water.
Well, I tell you, as far as what I got out of, you asked me whether I got anything from the baseball days with regard.
So why don't you put the tape on?
Yes.
Okay.
You asked me about whether I got anything from the old days with regard to the baseball end of it. Mm-hmm. As I told you, I didn't learn much about cleanliness through them. But I did find out that cleanliness is very important to your lifestyle. And I also found out that being president of a senior citizen center in Brooklyn and dealing with a lot of older people, I find that they tend to neglect their bodies to the point of not being sanitary enough and not washing their hands enough, mm-hmm. with the net result that they got a lot of colds and they didn't watch their diet very much either, and with the net result that they ate things they shouldn't eat, mm-hmm. and didn't watch it, and things went wrong.
In a related way, what do you attribute your longevity to?
Well, I believe my longevity can be attributed in part to the fact that I eat a very good breakfast every day. Mm-hmm. I use the 5 whole grain cereals, and I use 3 or 4 fruits and a handful of raisins and dried milk, and I all put that all in the osteizer, and it makes two big heaping glasses with 2 glasses of water, and it makes a very good health drink. Mm-hmm. And that's my breakfast, together with having a half a dozen prunes every day, which help you to be regular.
Mm-hmm. Any of these people at the Senior Citizen Center grew up in Brooklyn as you did and sometimes talk to you about the Dodgers, or aren't they really aware of...
No, they're all aware of it. They... Mm-hmm.
So it does come up from time to time.
It does come up from time to time, yes. Mm-hmm.
If I could ask you if it was possible to do it all over again, is there anything that you would basically do differently?
That's a good question.
You know, in connection with the baseball or with other things.
If at this point in time, if you ask me, would I want to live my entire life all over again, and the answer is definitely not. I would not want to go through a lifetime of everything, although I had a fairly good life. But there were so many pitfalls, so many ups and downs, and when I think of how I escaped all the bad part of life and did enjoy a good part of the good part of life, so I've been very lucky. I was too young for the First World War, too old for the Second.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you still follow baseball today?
Very much so, yes. I like baseball. I follow it, but I don't follow it as keen as I think that I've sort of outgrown it to some extent and follow football a little bit more today.
Uh-huh.
Because Football seems to be a little bit more exciting.
How would you compare, from the positive side, baseball then with that?
Well, the players are more disciplined today. Although today, with the advent of crack and coke and everything else, and the fact that the big money is around, that the ball players today do things that they don't stop to think. They're young and they're in their 20s, 22, and making a fortune and money, and they don't realize that if they injure their body, they're not going to live to enjoy that the fruit of the money that they've earned.
Is there anything you like better about the baseball era when you were a bat boy as compared with the baseball of today?
Well, it seemed to be more enjoyable than the fact that you could be taken into the ball game, roam the outfield with the ball players, and have the freedom that that I had in those days. You can't have that today.
Right. Hank, when the Dodgers left Brooklyn in 1957 to go out to Los Angeles, what were your feelings about it at the time?
Well, to be frank with you, I was quite devastated when the Dodgers left, which was sometime about 1957. They went to play in Los Angeles. And that's why I feel right now that we no longer have the Dodgers here, and I've been rooting for the Mets, and I've gotten quite a rapport with the New York Mets, and as a matter of fact, the PR man has gotten together with me, and
J. Horowitz.
Mm-hmm. Has designated me as number one New York Met fan, and I have cards printed to that effect. Mm-hmm. So my allegiance, I feel right now, even though I was bat boy for a couple of years, is with the New York Mets, and I really believe that the way things are going, they've had a lot of dissension on the team. And it was all due to having a few people on the team who they allowed this dissension to happen, and I don't think it's going to happen anymore. And I think the Mets will be a better ball club as a result and have a good chance to win the pennant in 1992.
Have the Mets ever invited you back and let you go into the clubhouse or the dugout?
I've been there quite a bit. Right. As a matter of fact, I was down there last September.
That was
this past September, mm-hmm. And they took my picture with the Met Bat Boy.
Mm-hmm. You get to speak to any of the players?
Well, I was the last one to talk to Strawberry before he left for
L.A.
For L.A., and I felt his biceps and his muscles. I told him that he looked like he was 15 to 20 pounds underweight, and he told me, he says, he's always under a few pounds underweight, but he said, my body is that way. I keep it strong, and I'm able to do the things I want to do.
Did they let you go into the clubhouse before the game?
Yes, I was in the club.
How would you compare the atmosphere as when you were the bat boy?
It's more reserved, I would think. Yes, the ball players are friendly, but friendly only to a degree. They're not as friendly as they were in the old days.
Not as much clowning around.
Not as much clowning around. There's more serious business.
How about
there is some, but it's very little.
about the press coverage?
Press coverage is tremendous. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They have the press box.
Hank, I really want to thank you for the time you gave us. It was really very interesting and enjoyable. Mm-hmm.